This special edition in-depth program on our first responders is brought to you in part by the Knoxville Hospital and Clinics, the Pleasantville Clinic and E.J. McKeever Clinic, Knoxville Chamber of Commerce, Marion County Auto Body, Knoxville Raceway, and the Marion County Fair Association. Join us for in-depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about, following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you would like to suggest a topic for in-depth, send an email to bobleonard@kniakrls.com. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Capstone Behavioral Health, Don's Heating and Cooling, Pierschbacher Funeral Home, Hewitt Service Center in Monroe, Anytime Fitness, and McCall Monument. Enjoy the program.
Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, our first responders work to keep us safe. Where we run from danger, they run towards it. What makes a good firefighter? What kinds of decisions need to be made at a fire? And what's the command structure? In the ninth part of a special 10-part in-depth series on our first responders, let's go in-depth with Doug Van Gorkum, fire chief of the Pella Fire Department, and Captain Randy Bogard, also with the Pella Fire Department. Doug, how long have you been fire chief?
Oh, my. I'm going to say 8 years now, but I really can't tell you for sure.
Okay, more or less 8 years, and how long on the department?
40 years.
40 years?
40. That's correct.
That's incredible. You started as a child.
Oh, yeah. I was still in diapers.
And Randy, you're a captain, right?
Yes, I am.
And how long have you been with the department?
I've been with the department almost 30 years.
30 years? You started as a kid, too.
24 I started, yeah.
Well, all right, you must enjoy it. Both of you guys must enjoy it.
We do. Yes, we do.
Don't you ever get tired of it? I mean, coming out in the middle of the night, anytime, you know, getting away from work, on holidays, birthdays, doesn't that get old?
I would say no, it doesn't get old, but sometimes you quabble a little bit in your own mind and say, oh, gosh, here we go again. But once you leave whatever you're leaving, whether it be family, friends, whatever it is, you know you have a job to do, and you do your job.
Like he said, when you leave, it might be inconvenient at the time, but you put your mind in the zone, you might say, switch over to the fireman's side, and then you just basically go about your business.
Does it ever get sort of tiresome? You're called out for an alarm that you know you've been called out on that same alarm a dozen times. I mean, I don't want to go to that.
Absolutely. There's times when false alarms and it's getting better in our community. But there was a time when we had several false alarms at a particular one or two facilities in our city, that they just had faulty equipment that needed to be fixed. But when we get paged out by the dispatcher here at Pella Police Department, we go do it. We find out what's wrong, but we really know when we're heading that direction that we're going to get there and find nothing. And after that happens several times, I can notice a lessening of attendance. In other words, a false alarm that's happened several times, where you would get the majority of the firefighters come to the station, you might get a small amount towards the end that show up just because it's another false alarm. And I understand that, but in the same thing, CO2 detectors, we have had a lot of those. People are buying them, and it's a great thing to buy. You should have one in your home. But when the battery goes dead, it starts to chirp, and that's when the people feel that it's going off because there's carbon monoxide in their home, when really it's just a low battery. And we get called out to those too, but we go and we check the home for CO. We have meters that check that, and we go and check them. And yes, we definitely have had homes that it was good that we did check it because there was a high level of CO.
Randy, what does it mean to be a captain in the Pella Fire Department?
Well, each call that happens needs someone in charge, and we have a chief, assistant chief, and captain, so I'm basically third in line. In the absence of the other two, that puts me in charge of a particular scene, and so I guess it falls in my lap just because they're not there. I'm okay with that. It works best when we're all there and we can all be in command of a certain portion of a scene, particularly the large ones, the big all-day structure fires, things like that. It really helps to have us all there. Many of the small calls, you just need somebody to make the decision. Yes, we're going to do this. No, we're not. When the call is wrapped up and when you can head back, things like that. So, yeah, I wind up being in charge sometimes.
Well, and on those big buildings, sometimes you can't see on the other side of the building, Doug, and you have to rely on other people and on your captain and assistant chief to tell you what's happening there, right?
Yes. It's something hard for me to do, but one of the things they always highly recommend in all the training that I've had and we all have had is IC, incident commander. You have to appoint someone to that position when you arrive at the scene, but that can change. In other words, first truck on, the pump operator might be telling the guys to take the hose in that window, go in that door, that sort of thing. But when one of the other officers arrive, then instant command is turned over. And what you're supposed to do, what should do as instant command, is you should stand back away from the scene totally, out of everything, and be able to look the whole situation over. I do that the best I can, but I'm still a firefighter at heart. So I want to get up there. I don't grab a hose anymore because I still have to take care of and watch over all of the firefighters to make sure first and utmost that they're safe and they go home with us at the end of the fire.
More in depth after this.
This special edition in-depth program on our first responders is brought to you in part by Hubes Garage, Vermeer Corporation, Iowa State Savings Bank, Pella Roll Screen Foundation, Dan's Plumbing and Heating in Knoxville, and the Knoxville Police Department and Knoxville Fire and Rescue. Join us for in-depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about, following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you miss in-depth, you can hear this week's programs in their entirety at KNIAKRLS.com and the radio audio media player and catch up on in-depth programs that you may have missed. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Pleasantville Schools, Knoxville Regional Livestock Market, Marion County Public Health Department, Morris Roofing, Norm Rosendahl Tiling and Septic, and the Knoxville Area Anesthesia Services with Steve Eck.
I continued my conversation with Fire Chief Doug Van Gorkum and Captain Randy Bogard. It seems like there's a lot of dangerous positions whenever I've all seen you fight fires and other firefighters fight fires. There's lots of danger and things that the lay public like myself might not recognize as dangerous. Is that indeed the case, Randy?
It can be. There's certainly danger in any fire situation, no doubt. But our number one goal, our main priority, and this is how we're trained, regardless of what the situation is to bring everyone home safe. So we try not to do anything in an unsafe manner. We will not put our people in a harmful position when we don't have them properly equipped or trained. That becomes our number one goal, bringing home everybody safe. But yes, the rest of the danger we try to manage with our equipment and with our training. And by determining, based on what we see, then we can decide if it's too dangerous or not. We call it risk versus benefit is how they train us on that. So we assess that to each situation and decide, is the risk worth it? If there's life at stake, then yes, it might be. But otherwise, no, we're not going in there. There's no one in there. So we fight it from the outside.
Sure, that makes sense. Property isn't that important compared to human life, human injuries. But how do you make that decision if you know there's somebody in the building? Who makes that decision? And then what are the criteria by which you come to your conclusion?
First, every situation is different, no matter what it is. So we have to make a decision and stick by it, because once we set our game plan into motion, changing it, you might have to, but it could cause more harm than good. So to answer your question, we have been taught how to read smoke. It sounds silly, but it isn't. How to read smoke can tell a firefighter a lot about what's going on inside that house. And if you have smoke coming out, of a house, then more than likely, fire does not kill people. Smoke does. Smoke inhalation, they will die from the gases that come off of different things that are burning. So more than likely, when there is a tremendous amount of smoke in a house, that person is already deceased.
Really? That quickly?
Oh, yes. It's if anybody has ever been in a fire situation, we had one wall back where a gentleman wanted to go in and get a piece of equipment out of his building. And we told him no, but he still attempted to. He was only in there just a couple seconds and came back out because you can't breathe in it. There's no oxygen. It's the fire and the smoke's taking all the oxygen out of the air, for one thing. Plus, once you inhale that bad smoke, it's deadly. It really is. That's why we train kids at school, when we talk to them about fire prevention and all that sort of thing, to crawl, because smoke goes up first and then it works its way down in a room. It goes to the ceiling and then it comes down. And if you're crawling, you're in clear areas. But once that smoke turns a certain color, which is kind of it can turn yellow, it can turn really black. When the white smoke, we can still possibly do something to help someone, but once that smoke starts to turn away from that white or light gray color, it's toxic stuff.
More in depth after this.
This special edition in-depth program on our first responders is brought to you in part by Pleasantville State Bank, Griffin Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, Raymaker Screen Printing, Two Rivers Cooperative, Verduft Agency, Central Cellular, and the Pella Walmart. Join us for In-Depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about, following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you would like to suggest a topic for In-Depth, send an email to bobleonard@kniakrls.com. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Dave's Pro Auto, Kooning Plumbing and Heating, Boats Home Furnishings, Dowie Pest Control, Van Haften Racing and Otley, and Pella Lock and Key. Enjoy the program.
I continued my conversation with Fire Chief Doug Van Gorkum and Captain Randy Bogard.
Now, is it tough sometimes to keep some of the younger, say, gung-ho guys from, you know, rushing right into a situation, that guys that might not have 30, 40 years of experience?
Oh, it can be, but we have a real good group of guys that are good at following orders, and they won't go above their training. But yeah, new guys come on, you see the gung-ho spirit. It's great to see it, but sometimes you do have to throttle a guy back every now and then. He's getting into something that he doesn't quite understand, but that's pretty rare. We typically don't have a lot of that.
You have to hit that right balance between gung-ho and probably too timid, huh?
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. There's that middle of the road thing. And even with years of service on a department, you need those. We need new young people on the department because it is hard work. It takes a lot of energy out of you, and that's another thing. As us as people in charge, Randy and I and Joel Brofart's the assistant chief. We watch real close what the guys are doing, and Pella Ambulance is always at our scenes and monitor all of our firefighters' vitals. Once they've been in a fire and had a SCBA on for their 15 minutes, they go to rehab and see how their vital signs are and make sure that everything's going well.
SCBA.
I'm sorry. That's a personal breathing apparatus. It's a mask that goes over your face and an air pack that you wear. It adds about 20 pounds to you.
it looks like with all that gear, you've got to get worn out real quick.
That's the thing. That's really what happens. That gear, you put all of it on. I've never really set and weighed a pair of turnout gear with the helmet and the bunker pants and the coat and the boots, the gloves, and then you put a self-breathing apparatus on. I'll bet you that you're soon adding 30 to 35 pounds to your weight, I would think.
And so that's dangerous if people think about their own workout. After 15 minutes of your own workout, sometimes people are pretty tired. But imagine a workout with all of this equipment on in a dangerous, stressful situation. It's not going to take long before physically you could be in a compromising situation.
Yeah, definitely. That's why ambulance responds to our calls, and they are very, very in tune to our good health, and they monitor that, and they stress the rehab side to where if we have guys in those situations, then they want them back out and checked so that nobody who's maybe has overstressed their heart or is overheated in some way, dehydrated, that type of thing, we don't want them going back in until the ambulance clears them.
So that's how it works. The ambulance will clear them if Doug Poking or with Pella Ambulance or one of his some of his leadership team there says you aren't going back in, they're not going back in.
That's right. No, I will. I'm very much on their side. If they say they shouldn't be going back in, we're not putting them in harm's way again for their own health. It isn't a good thing to do. And that is something over the years that has changed, and that's changed for the better in my book.
More in depth after this.
This special edition in-depth program on our first responders is brought to you in part by Laley USA, Dr. Kurt Vanderplu, Precision Pulley and Idler, McGriff's of New Sharon, Golf Cars of Iowa, Enfeld Meat Market, Pella Engraving, Pella Regional Health Center, Van Haften Plumbing and Heating, and U.S. Bank. Join us for In-Depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about, following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you miss In-Depth, you can hear this week's programs in their entirety at kniakrls.com in the radio audio media player and catch up on In-Depth programs that you may have missed. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Windmill Mall Antiques, Vandenberg's, Central Cellular, and Pella Knoxville and Sully, Franklin Street Clothing, Meniga Pest Control, Cabinet Design Appella, West End Auto, and Community First Credit Union.
I continued my conversation with Fire Chief Doug Van Gorkum and Captain Randy Bogard.
What are some of the characteristics of a good firefighter?
Well, obviously, good health and for the most part, physically fit is a big part of it. He needs to be good with his hands and somebody that is able to think on their feet in the heat of the moment and not panic and go off and do crazy things. You know, that's one of the things that we train for. You know, it doesn't come natural to everyone and maybe to anyone, but that's what comes with the experience. So that's what Doug mentioned, a good mix of the youth and the gung-ho attitude along with the experience. That's what we're looking for. That's why it's important as your people roll over. We have guys retiring off. We got to get guys on to start gaining that experience so we don't have everybody at the same level.
The other thing in regards to that, it's a good mix to had a situation. We had ice rescue training last week, and one of the guys came up after that because he had never done it before, and he said to me, "Guys, this is great. I really enjoyed that." He said, I have no problem getting in the water and rescuing somebody, but don't put me on that aerial." And what that means is there are firefighters on our department that we've got that 100-foot aerial, won't get in it. It's too high off the ground. But they can be tremendous, just tremendous, as a pump operator, as a firefighter on the ground level. So we kind of know who doesn't like heights, who doesn't like confined spaces. Those people can do things that some of the other guys can't. So it's just a good mix.
Well, it's nice people are honest. They just don't try to bluff their way through this stuff, too. I mean, because there's a natural tendency among some guys to just bluff their way through it, right?
That's true. I would say in our case that I think that pretty much they'll come forward with their fears or dislikes or whatever you want to call it.
They'll eventually have to, because the guy that's bluffing is going to get caught at some point. It serves no purpose at all to try to be someone you're not, and I don't think anybody here is that way.
Biggest, toughest fire ever?
I've been asked that before, and as many years as I've been on, I don't know. I think of several. Probably one of the biggest that I was involved in was Skunk River Block and Pellet. That was about a 13-hour fire. It took a long time to get it out because it had so much wood in it. We've had some other fires in the downtown business district that in years past that were long, tough fires. Like you, Randy, what do you think of, too?
Well, the public, of course, always goes to those big, high-impact, visible fires like Skunk River was, you know, where everybody could see it and everybody hears about it. But to me, the tough ones are the ones where you have maybe something is smoldering, barely burning in a the first floor of a house between the basement level and the first floor, where you have something ignited there electrically or maybe the dryer, something like that, and it smoked up the house. There's no visible flames. You know you have a situation. It's very serious. You can't find it. You haven't lost the house yet at this point, and you don't want to, but you can't get to it. You don't know where it is. The house is venting along the foundation all the way around. There's no clear point of where that fire started. The basement's full of smoke. You try sending people down there, they can't see a thing. They don't see flames, things like that. I can think of two over the years that were particularly difficult, where you stand there and you literally, no matter how well trained you are, don't quite know what to do in those situations, because at this point you haven't lost the house yet. The other fires, the ones that the public sees, they're usually the total losses where it's cut and dried. You're on defensive mode. You're throwing water on the fire as you see it. But it's the ones you can't find, can't locate, can't identify. Those are the tough ones.
We're talking about the Pella Fire Department, as we have been this morning, Bob. Our department also takes care of the rural area in this area. We have all of Lake Prairie Township, and that is a board of trustees that oversees the department. Gets us what we need when we need it. They have been very, very good to us over the years as far as they want us to stay safe, whether that means with the gear we're wearing, whether that means with good fire equipment that we have to use. We cover all of Lake Prairie Township, and then we have three other townships surrounding us that we take care of part of also. So we go out quite a ways. It's not just the city of Pella. There's two separate departments in here, but we are, the firefighters are of two.
Any last words either of you'd like to share with the community about your work here at the fire department?
Well, one thing that comes to mind for me is in the past few years, the state has upped the ante, so to speak, on training. And it's become required that we have ongoing training and updated yearly. So each one of these men is required to have 24 hours of training per year, and that's documented. And that's the requirement to be a frontline firefighter, so to speak, to actually go into the structures and so forth. That's required. And when that came out, we as officers here were worried what that might do to the membership. Some of these guys might say, I'm not interested in that. But I'm very proud to say not a single guy walked out the door when that requirement came up. And we they've met that and in a lot of cases exceeded it. So I feel right now we are the best trained we've ever been because of that. Some of this training is repetitive, redundant, so forth, but it's all necessary. And, you know, if you train on something enough times, you remember it. And that's sort of the way we go with that. And so you can never have too much training. Now it's become mandatory. So that has sort of weeded out people as far as they think that they can just come in here and jump on a truck and go, and there's a lot more to it than that.
Thanks to Chief Doug Van Gorkum and Captain Randy Bogard for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In-Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In-Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In-Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.